All right, it sounds like people can hear me now. Yes, as Dan was mentioning, this talk is based on actual EHT data from 2009 through 2013, where we've been pushing hard to try to get reliable estimates of the closure phase in Sagittarius Star. Now, I know that some of you aren't radio astronomers, radio interferometrists, so just to remind you, each baseline has coordinates measured in wavelengths projected in the direction that we're looking at that we call UV coordinates. And these are related to the spatial frequency that we're measuring. So inversely related in radians, and the position angle gives the position angle on the sky. When we do our correlation, we end up with a complex visibility. So the Van Sitter-Zernike theorem tells us that this visibility is related to the Fourier transform of the image. Specifically, we're getting a measure of the Fourier component that's indexed by this UV point. And the amplitude and the phase mean things independently. So the amplitude tells us how much power we're measuring on that spatial frequency. But the phase is really the more important part. It's telling us where that power is located. This is the really powerful diagnostic for us because we can really see what's going on in the structure of a source. Shep is fond of showing this picture, but it doesn't scan so well from the archives. So instead, let's replace Walter Cronkite with Lena. So there are two input images here. There's a stuffed toy and there's Lena. And the two images on the bottom, the one on the left here is they have Fourier decomposed each of these images into amplitude and phase. They've taken the phases of the Lena image and the amplitudes of the stuffed toy image. And this is reversed, the phases of the toy and the amplitudes of Lena. And you can see that the amplitudes almost don't matter at all. You can tell what the image is. Having the right Fourier amplitudes is key to cleaning up the image, getting really high dynamic range. But I think those of you who are black belt radio interferometrists kind of know this intuitively, that when you're doing self-calibration, it's much more important to get the phases right than the amplitudes. And we have a problem at 1.3 millimeters, which is that the atmosphere corrupts our phase. So it's very hard to understand what a visibility phase is, or to measure what a visibility phase is. So this particular example is one scan from this past year on BLAC. It was a very high signal noise ratio scan between Arizona and phased Carmen, California. And what's shown there are the phase every second over the course of a 5-minute scan. And this is after the average rate has been taken out. I haven't plotted error bars here, which would be 4 or 5 degrees. But as you can see, the phases are dancing around with time. So it's going up and down here. And then there's this interval here over which we have more than a turn and a half of phase in about a minute. And this is just due to the changing effects in the troposphere, mostly water vapor. That's scrambling our phases. If you were to ask me what is the visibility phase on this baseline, I have absolutely no clue. We don't know what the zero phase is going into this. And in fact, this hinders fringe detection and amplitude estimation as well. But at least we have ways that we can compensate for that, recover much of the lost signal to noise ratio, get a pretty unbiased estimate of what the amplitude is underlying this. So in terms of the amplitude estimation, we can go back and look at small segments of data here over which the phase isn't changing all that rapidly, get amplitude estimates, and do scalar averaging where we throw out the phase information. If we're lucky, we may have prior phase information. That could be a water vapor radiometer at a site that's giving us information on what's happening in the atmosphere. This could also be that we're trying to figure out the phase on a baseline, and we already have information on two other baselines that form a closed triangle, or on one polarimetric quantity compared to another. There are strategies to help us on the amplitude side. But on the phase side, we can't inherently derive a meaningful visibility phase. And so instead, we use phase closure. So that's where we're looking at three stations, three different baselines, and the closure phase is just the sum, the directed sum of the phases measured on that triangle. And at any given time, what you observe is the phase that you would measure from the source, the phase of that visibility, plus a term that corrupts that phase from the atmosphere above one station, minus a similar term above a different station, the second station. And then there's baseline-based noise, thermal noise, that won't close out. But the key insight is that when you add all of these together, each atmospheric phase is added positively in one case, negatively in the other, so they all cancel out. And what you end up at the end is what you measure is the closure phase of the source plus some thermal noise. The atmosphere drops out. Also, almost anything station-based drops out. So if you have clock errors, for instance, those will close as well. All right, so where do we stand before the phase information? Well, we have published a few papers on the EHT data on SAGJSTAR, but it's all been amplitude data. So from the 2007 data, we got long baseline detections on the JCMT-SMT baseline. And in 2009, we got fringes on all baselines among the JCMT, SMT, and KARMA. This was KARMA single dishes at the time. This was before the phased array processor. And you know, we were able to get a lot of interesting science out of that. Just a size estimate alone tells you that you're very close to the black hole. Other people have discussed that, so I'm not going to go into that in detail now. We were able to place a pretty poor upper limit on the magnitude of the closure phase. Sort of, we were willing to say within 40 degrees of zero, but we weren't willing to make any strong statements about the closure phase of SAGJSTAR at the time. Although in the meantime, we have used closure phases to model other sources. I think Shep showed a model of 1924-292 that Rusen Liu et al. Created, and we've applied this to other sources as well. But since 2009, we've implemented a number of improvements. One is we discovered a bug in Forfeit that was introducing additional error into our phase estimates. We have figured out how to process our data in a way that minimizes these errors in addition. I mentioned ad hoc phase capability. Now we can boost the signal-to-noise ratio sometimes on our weakest baseline in a triangle. And it turns out that the signal-to-noise ratio of a closure phase is dominated by the signal-to-noise ratio of the weakest baseline in that triangle. In addition, we've made a number of improvements to increase the sensitivity of our stations. We have phased arrays now at the SMA and KARMA. We happened to luck into better weather in 2013. We have a lot more data points. We have left and right circular data. And so over the course of 4 years now, 2009, 2011, 2012, 2013, we've accumulated a large number of data points. And at some point, even if your individual data points have large errors on them, if you acquire enough of them, you really start to beat down the random errors. So without further ado, here's the data. So what I'm plotting here is closure phase against this is labeled time-sorted index. So within each day, and it's color-coded by day and indicated by year, just in order of the where we have the measurements in time, all the closure phases are plotted. So the time range within a day may not be the same as the time range in another day. But the dashed line here shows zero closure phase, and I think it's quite clear, even before we launch into any statistics here, that there's a clear bias. The closure phase in this orientation, California, Hawaii, Arizona, is biased to be positive on SAGJSTAR. There was evidence, even as early as 2011, that this was the case, but it was kind of near the three sigma level. And now, with the addition of data from 2012 and 2013, we're up at the 5 or 6 sigma level. And we can fairly confidently state now that the closure phase on SAGJSTAR in this triangle is non-zero. So if you want to put numbers to that, weighted mean is about 6.5 degrees. The median is about 6.3 degrees. It's difficult, of course, to estimate the errors on a median directly. So we've done a bootstrap analysis. And over 10 to the 8th trials, we never obtain a median that is zero or negative. So we're very confident in the fact that the median closure phase is non-zero. you can ask, all right, what does that tell you? Well, immediately that rules out any point symmetric brightness distribution. So Sagittarius star isn't a Gaussian, be that circular or elliptical. It isn't a pure ring. It isn't a symmetric double source. And on the doubles, I put up this freaky plot here. So you can ask, suppose that I did have a double source, like, for instance, two point sources or two identical elliptical Gaussians corresponding to two nozzles of a jet. And I asked just for one particular scan where I have a closure phase, what closure phase would I get if I put a point source at the origin and a point source somewhere else of equal amplitude? And green here is zero closure phase, black and white are 180 degrees, and if your two amplitudes are identical, you can only get zero or 180 degrees, and the green region is, you know, more or less allowed, and the black and white is forbidden. But we can relax the restrictions and say, suppose we have two disconnected regions that are otherwise identical but have different brightnesses. So if the amplitude ratio is 0.9 or 0.75 or 0.5 or a quarter, and the closure phase you would get on this one scan starts to come down to zero in all cases. And so you can ask, for the range of closure phases that we detect, what's sort of the allowed space? If I put a point source at the center and another point source of a different amplitude somewhere else on the sky, what would be consistent with our data? And this ring here is a radius of 50 microarc seconds, or approximately the diameter of the photon ring. So if you had something coming off one side of the photon ring and something coming off the other side, and one of the sources was brighter than the other, like suppose you had a Sagittarius star is launching a jet in the plane of the sky, there's a very slight offset from that, so that one side is a little bit brighter than the other. And while we can't rule out the possibility that you would have like a bright point to the west and a fainter point to the east, an east-west jet, there's very little region of phase space here that would be allowed for a two-point source model. Now, this is applicable to geometries that are point symmetric, but not to reflection symmetric. So I don't want to leave you with the impression that our data are ruling out jets in any sense. You might expect that a real jet near the base will be dominated by the rotation that was acquired in the accretion flow, and therefore that there will be a left-right asymmetry in addition to a vertical asymmetry in the jet, and you might get a more reflection-symmetric geometry. But I think this investigation is trying to lead us away from regions of emission at 1.3 millimeter that are disconnected. Another implication of non-zero closure phase is that you can break a 180-degree rotational degeneracy in your models. These two models, left and right, so the left one is taken from Avery's paper in 2011, in which he was trying to fit a smooth Rioff model to all of the amplitude data at the time and came out with a best-fit model. The right picture here is the exact same model rotated 180 degrees. And when you rotate something 180 degrees in the plane of the sky, well, all of your visibility amplitudes are identical, but the signs of the phases flip. And so it is only with closure phases or with phase information in general that you would ever hope to be able to break this degeneracy. In this particular case, the one on the right, it has a sign of closure phase compared to the one on the left, although when you throw in closure phase data, as Avery has done, your best fit model will change. So anyway, going back to the data as a whole, the data set look consistent with being drawn from the same sample day by day, with the exception of 2011 day 94, which are these light green points here. That's the only day in which the median closure phase and the mean closure phase is actually very slightly negative. And the difference is meaningful in a statistical sense. We also see changes in the closure phase over the course of a night. So we can plot our closure phase as a function of GST. So as the night progresses, the Earth rotates, the baseline geometry changes, we're measuring different points in the UV plane. So we might expect that our closure phases will be different. And indeed, that's what we see. The small dots here are individually measured closure phases, no errors thrown in. And then the darker points are binned up into that looks like 9 regions of about 20 closure phases each, along with standard errors of the mean thrown on. And you can see that there is a trend for the closure phase to increase with increasing GST over the course of the night. So if you measure a closure phase at the beginning of the night and at the end, you're likely to get a larger value toward the end. And Avery has nicely put in, done additional modeling, and his best fit models show a trend as well where the closure phase wants to increase over the course of the observing night. Avery, I'm sorry you're not giving this talk since so much of this this analysis is yours. But you can ask, what is the, if you were to assume that you had a Rioff model, what is the best position angle on the sky for the spin axis of the black hole, or the spin axis of the accretion flow, assuming they're aligned? And the first 4 epochs here are based only on the amplitude data from one night in 2007 and 3 nights in 2009. And then each of these epochs here is information from the closure phases from one of the epochs that we've observed. And as you can see, with the exception of this one day, they're all trying to give you the same information, that the position angle of Sag J star is close to 180 degrees, maybe a little bit less. But on this day where there is some clear variability, there's a tendency for it to favor a different position angle. Now, obviously, Sag J star didn't flip its spin axis for that day. Something else went on, which I'll get to in a moment. Again, from Avery's work, you can marginalize over spin, inclination, and position angle. And the gray curves here show the values that you expect for his Rioff models just from the amplitude data alone. And then the blue shows with closure phases. And low spin and inclination near 60 degrees were favored before, are more strongly favored now. The position angle looks like it shifted a little bit from where we might have expected before, but it's not totally inconsistent. And in particular, there's no longer this 180 degree ambiguity. So if you really want to push it and ask, you know, what kind of variability might you expect if you had a Rioff model, maybe you have some sort of non-thermal event, a hotspot goes off, and where could you place a hotspot to be consistent with the closure phases on the day that looks different from all the rest? And so they're rotated now into spin axis pointing up. Avery has done the analysis and found that if you have to place an additional spot somewhere relative to the accretion flow, it wants to live either in the plane that defines the accretion disk or in the direction that defines the jet. It doesn't like to live off at 45 degrees, for instance. So this is perhaps what one might expect a priori, but again, this is somewhat speculative at this moment, and I would not feel comfortable making any strong statements in this direction until we have more data in the future, more baselines. We can also comment a little bit on refractive noise from scattering. So it's expected that on long baselines, the signal we see will be dominated by noise rather than by the intrinsic size of the source. This is a logarithmic scale here. So as you go out many times the diffractive scale length, you will be dominated by the scattering than by intrinsic source structure. To point out that our longest baseline on the Earth is going to be around 2 RDEF. And this is a log scale down here as well. So we're going to be out somewhere over here. And Carl Gwynn's group showed at 1.3 centimeters that you do see evidence of this floor that's dominated by the refraction that's caused by the scattering. The fact that our closure phases aren't bouncing around all that much, with the exception of the one day of variability, is possibly telling us that we're okay. We're not going to be in this regime where we're dominated by refractive noise. We're actually seeing the intrinsic source structure and not the scattering. But Michael Johnson will talk about this a little bit more on Thursday. So Dan's getting up. I'll launch into my summary. We've detected non-zero closure phases on SAD-J star. That shows that the source structure at 1.3 millimeters is asymmetric and places very strong constraints on emission models. We have seen variability. We can prove that that variability must be occurring on these small spatial scales. We don't think refractive noise is an issue for the data as we currently have, and that's encouraging for the future as well. And in the future, we'll have more data, and we'll have more sensitive data. So watch the space. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Vincent. I think we have time for a couple questions. We have out there. Jeff?
So, Vincent, you showed a plot that I think was showing allowed parameter space for extension. Yeah, keep going backwards. Keep going. This one. So, is this saying that the elongation that you're inferring from the closure phases is predominantly east-west?
No, what I'm saying is if you were to throw two Gaussians on the sky and ask where could the two Gaussians be located relative to one another and still be consistent with the closure phase data, and the colors here, incidentally, are for different amplitude ratios. If you want them to be separated by the diameter of the photon ring, then you're kind of restricted to an east-west geometry in which the source at the west side is brighter than the source at the east side. The nozzle at the west would be brighter than the nozzle at the east.
So, but does this, I wouldn't imagine the data can say very much, say, about north-south deviations just because it's predominantly an east-west baseline.
Well, it turns out that we have, they are predominantly east-west baselines, I will grant that. With the exception of the SMT Karma baseline, which also, you know, if you go back to these, you can see that each one of these has a certain pattern that's allowed and disallowed. And over the course of the night, those patterns, the allowed and disallowed regions, rotate and deform. And so you actually can start eliminating much of the region of the phase space based on that. And I've been actually fairly generous here. I mean, I admit that this is a very simplified toy model, as it necessarily has to be, because if you start having additional parameters for what the nozzle looks like, then of course anything can fit. But in this particular case, I've allowed the entire region from, I think, like minus 3 sigma to plus 3 sigma on the median for the first half and the second half of the night treated independently. So it's like 0.5 to like 10 or 12 degrees. You have two sources separated by something that's not in the colored region here, you're going to get closure phases that start falling outside that range.
Vincent, when you look at the RMS noise of the closure phases, can you make any limits on the possible motion of a hotspot? I mean, if we would see this orbiting hotspot model, like the plot which usually Shep shows when he plots the ALMA data to see the time series of the closure phase. Do you think this sets somehow the size of the orbit already, the RMS noise of the closure phases?
So we haven't looked into an orbit within a night in detail on the closure phase. On the closure phase data, because the closure phases have a large enough error bars that would be very difficult to get into. However, and this actually turns out to be a very good lead into the next talk, the diagnostic there that is very powerful is polarimetric ratios. And so I'm going to cede my time and my microphone to Michael to talk about that.
Thank you.